Now, having sort of run the train from one end of the track to the other, yes, Patrick?
Just one bit to step back a bit.
It's all right, you can go back to an earlier station.
About ritual, not being the opposite.
Mm-hmm. That's, I might not be quoting it exactly accurately, but Master quotes Swami Shankaracharya, who was a sage in India, a recognized master, as saying that you cannot free yourself from delusion, from maya, by merely doing outward rituals. You can't just do the fire ceremonies, you can't just go to mass, you can't just go to confession, you can't just do your rosary, because the rosary doesn't have the power to conquer maya. It's not the opposite of it. The opposite of delusion is realization. And realization comes by inner communion. And when you have inner communion, then you can escape from delusion, because inner communion is the opposite of delusion.
So you have inner communion while doing the ritual? Or?
Well, it's possible, but you would.
Kriya is a ritual.
Pardon me? No, Kriya is a practice. Kriya is actually scientifically moving the energy. Now, if you have sufficient devotion, the communion wafer can be an inner reality. But then, it's not the ritual that's giving you the power, it's you. The ritual is not changing you, it's you who are finding the power in the ritual. And that doesn't mean, like, you know, Saint Therese Neumann, it never ate anything but the communion wafer, but if it wasn't sanctified, she knew it and she couldn't swallow it, because then it was a piece of bread and she couldn't eat it. But if it had been, sanctified isn't the word, consecrated, she could tell. So there's, you know, saints give confirmation. That's not to say that outward rituals are without power. It's just that you can't attain self-realization merely by going to church unless you're also doing something inside of yourself. And so you may sit in church and do something inside of yourself, but you've got to be doing something inside yourself. Does that make sense? It's a lovely statement. I love that one. It puts you in mind of having to create opposites. I mean, you have to create something of equal power. That's really what he's saying, of balancing power.
You're not like a champion of ritual, but you have to engage it intensely.
Oh, chanting. Well, chanting is. Right. It's an outward action that has the potential to take you into true inner communion. But you see, eventually you go into silence. But chanting has the capacity to lift your consciousness and harmonize your feelings and calm your mind to the point where you can then go into silence. So it's a gateway. Yeah. But I mean, ritual is useful. I mean, for heaven's sake, Swami wrote one for us. And there were a lot of people when he did who got all up in arms. And he said, get real, you know, essentially. He didn't say that, but he said that. Get real about this. Ritual is going to help, because you'll hear it over and over. It goes deeper and deeper into your subconscious. It'll strengthen your position. No, in and of itself, it won't free you, but it can help you. It can help you get free, and it'll help many people get free, because it'll give them something to hold on to. As long as we know what it is, the very ritual itself says that ritual won't help you. I mean, it speaks of inner communion all through it. Yeah. Okay. Any other questions or comments? James?
Can there be a true artistic feeling that does not express uplift?
Oh, yes. You just can. You can chant. You can be artistic at any vibratory level you want. Swami's theory here is what constitutes greatness in art. And so what constitutes true greatness, lasting greatness? You could do a work that is powerful, clear, transmits with overwhelming effectiveness any vibration at all. Now, will it endure and be recognized as great? Swami says only if it resonates with soul consciousness, basically, is what he really says, when you really look through it. Only if it really speaks to what human beings intuitively know is their own true nature. And he makes a point, and he makes it over and over, and it's important, that it's all right if your perception is not God realized. It's all right if your perception is not God realized way down the scale, not God realized, as long as what you're presenting is seen in the context of trying to move upward. I mean, from the criteria he's using for greatness. You can perfectly express the tragedy of human loss, which you could say on one level is just Maya. But you could express it so perfectly, and he uses Shakespeare all the time as an example. Because Shakespeare presents so many different aspects of human nature, but somehow, and the criteria that he uses, which I'll review in a minute, it all generates this uplifting energy. And as he says, you see these villainous characters like Shylock, and there's just this such a sense of shared humanity in the portrayal of it, that even though the subject matter is not elevated, the effect of the treatment of that subject matter is elevated because of all the other things that he brings into play. And, of course, not everybody is interested in elevating consciousness, their own or anybody else's. And much earlier in the book, Swami says, I'm not telling you what to do. If that's what you are, if that's what people are, fine. I'm just talking about, if you're interested in self-realization, how to look at art. And if you're interested in self-realization, I'm asking you the question is whether you actually want that person's vibrations in your home, which he's writing this for a much wider audience, for people who may never have thought about it, that it's dismal and downward pulling, but it's so well executed, they brought it into their home. But the theme and the consciousness of it is, as he said, nobody you'd have over for dinner, but you'd hang it on the wall. Does that make sense?
It does. I can think of many examples in different media, but for example, Mussorgsky's Night on the Wall Mountain is not uplifting, and yet it's magnificent, at least in my opinion. And there are many symphonies that have passages that may express violence or some other very powerful idea that require it to be of a heavier nature.
Right, but that's part of life. He's not at all saying, and it's very important to realize, he's not at all saying that we can't or shouldn't include the entire spectrum of reality, because all those things are true. It all depends on the perspective you bring to it. Are you reveling in it? Are you trying to push people down with it? Or are you entering into it for the sake of drawing a deeper truth out of it? And again, he writes about these qualities of generosity of spirit. You know, are you trying to separate? Are you trying to oppress? Or are you trying to embrace and to help others? Are you, the artist, genuinely spiritual in your outlook? It's the intent behind it. Or are you saying, Swami writes in an earlier chapter about a composer, I know who he was talking about, a person that we knew. And he talked about how he just was showing off in his music. It was just completely without rhyme or reason. It was just to show how clever he was. So there was, any emotion that he was expressing through it was really, the hidden message was his own ego. And he talks about Tchaikovsky, just being when you go, have I pronounced it correctly? For some reason my mind goes blank. Just Swami's viewpoint that when you go into it, it's too much self-pity is how he put it. And so it keeps it from ever being really great, because greatness, and this is what's so interesting about the way Swami says it, I mean, among the zillions of things that are interesting, is he says that over time, human beings instinctively maintain contact with that art which affirms divine truth. And they gradually just let die away that art that doesn't. Even if at the time the person was unpopular, even if their art disappears for a while, if it really helps people see the bigger reality that we're all seeking, it will endure. And if it doesn't, it won't. And it's just human beings vote with their own awareness, intuitive awareness of it. Claire?
No, I think what's interesting about Tchaikovsky is that what has really endured is his ballet music.
Huh.
And I think that he thought that was very, that it was trivial. He didn't really like this ballet music.
Huh. Interesting.
But perhaps if there was less of a minute.
Yeah, less self-importance in it, and therefore it may have been better. I couldn't judge because I don't really know his work in any sense. I wouldn't know. But yes, it's quite possible that the thing that he valued less actually had more spirit because it had less ego. It's quite possible. I mean, you could see how that would happen. Yeah. Well, it's not, again, it's all right to like lots of things. We don't have to just hold out and only like this and only like that. This is really helping us to understand the whole cycle. And of course, you know, bits and pieces of things are beautiful. Many things or parts of them are beautiful. Part of a painting or part of a piece of music. And it's enough that that part's there. You just kind of live through the rest of it and you go through that part and you love it. Yeah.
I had a question that came out of the last chapter when Swami talked about the predictions of the future,
yeah,
how the music would go. And I understand what he was saying about the symphony and how that would change and how that would sort of die out. But I was wondering how, without those symphonies, how some of that great music would survive.
Well, that's a good question. You know, there certainly are enormous gaps in human history. We don't have any idea what the Egyptian music really sounded like. Or, you know, many civilizations exist for a while and then they're obliterated. When Vyasa gives his class on the yugas, he just talks about all these different times in history when everything was wiped out. You know, just it's mostly Kali Yuga descending, but things are wiped out and or rediscovered. See, the other thing that's happened that's very interesting, if you think about the yuga cycle, which is the nadir of consciousness on this planet, the apex of it, and then you have this long time where you descend and then coming back up, and most of you know we're about here on the upward moving cycle. But you see, you start discovering what was opposite you on the other side. So even though this might have been consciousness coming down and this is consciousness coming up, we're suddenly at the same level. And so Vyasa says things like, when this planet reaches the point of evolution, when the pyramids were built, then all the secrets of the pyramids will suddenly be known to us, whereas we don't get it now. So it's possible that music that really speaks to the people on the planet now. See, also you have to bear in mind, this is all about the people on the planet. And the people who are on the planet now because it's an appropriate planet. And when the planet changes, different people will come. Maybe us, maybe others, who knows? Master said you go to, there's many planets and you go all over the place. If it's Kali Yuga, and you're not really, you don't need a Kali Yuga, you'll go to the Dwapara Yuga. If it's Dwapara Yuga where you've been and you really need a Kali Yuga, you'll go to a Kali Yuga. And this particular little window of opportunity is the time when people get to destroy a great deal. And so lots of people are on this planet who like to rip things apart. And that's what we have. You know, there's just all these people here who have the karmic need to just wreak havoc on their brothers and sisters. And they're just running around wreaking havoc all over the place. But they won't be able to get to this planet after the whole thing calms down because there'll be havoc wreakers, and if they're not done, they'll have to go someplace else and wreak havoc. So that which you consider to be great music is great to a certain perspective. And it'll last as long as that perspective has popularity. Swami's music, which we consider to be great, is most people just are completely indifferent to it because it doesn't speak to them. But there will be an age on probably on this planet where suddenly people will just turn around and they'll discover this vast body of music that Donald Walters wrote, you know, back in the 80s, 90s, and the first part of whatever century they happened to be in at that time. Because all of a sudden it'll be there for them. And they won't remember Led Zeppelin necessarily. And they may or may not remember Beethoven. Just depends on whether it makes any sense to them or not. But if it's meant to be, it'll come back around. The rest it'll disappear because, you know, we're so thing-oriented, we think it matters, you know, that it get preserved. I don't mean to be inconsiderate, but, you know, when everybody talks about this species disappearing and that species and this tree fly and this, you know, leaf form and this turtle, and it's not like in essence, the reason why it's important is because we are so out of balance with nature that's not helping us very much. Swami talks about how long can the earth put up with this. He said, sooner or later, I think the earth is just going to purge itself of this pestilence of human nature, because human nature is such a drag right now for the earth. Okay.